Oh, let's hope so. And we're off. We're back. Oh, dear God, it's happened again. Deep thinking.
What the hell does God have to do with it?
Absolutely nothing. I mean, here's my argument against the existence of God. He hasn't stopped us yet.
There you go.
If you were the supreme.
Right, exactly. If you can't prove me wrong, I'm right. It works for six-year-olds all over the world.
What the hell do we call this? Deep thinking.
Deep thinking.
The motorcycle and apparently religious podcast.
He's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo. And this is 20 minutes of unscripted nonsense having to do with the finest sport on the planet, motorcycle road racing.
With the emphasis on unscripted.
What was the phrase that we... All right. Don't place any too much value on any one thing that we say.
Exactly.
Exactly, right?
We're starting to get some feedback.
And it's disturbing.
Yeah, overwhelmingly positive. But occasionally, you know, you get some comments like, oh, but why did you say this, that, or the other little thing?
Right.
So we just wanted to make it clear that this really is Michael and I having a conversation. A couple of people had mentioned to us while listening to us banter, like, dude, you guys should make a radio show. And so we did, because it's not really a radio show, it's a podcast.
This is way cheaper.
Anybody can do it. And literally, the other day, we're talking on the phone about something. We're like, whoa, 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 stop. We got to save that for the show. We can't have a conversation now unless there's a recording
and
going.
Disturbingly, I think my laugh does sound like Ed McMahon's.
It does.
Oh, God.
And my wife can imitate, most any. She can
do. It's because you're playing the podcast here all the time.
She hears it all the time,
yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's
so,
love.
As an example of this, I was thinking back about one of our podcasts. We were talking about Josh Herron going off to Moto2.
Right.
And I think it's clear if you listen to the tape that I was being sarcastic when I was saying, oh, yeah, you know, he only got 20th. He's no good. Right? Clearly, I think he did fucking awesome. And anybody who's going, oh, he only got 20th is a freaking idiot who can't do it. Right? But if you took the transcript of that, then the sarcasm would be lost. And somebody might go, oh, yeah, Ed was getting down on Josh Herron. So for the record, I think the guy's a stud. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he does year in Moto ST. Moto ST, sorry. Moto America.
No, Moto America.
And did
Super
you
Sport.
See on roadracingworld.com this
minute.
Evening
Hold
that
on.
Aprilia is coming with a two-rider
yeah,
team?
I'll talk about that
Sweet.
In a second. Let me get done slagging on Josh Herron here for a second. Because as far as I'm concerned, no, I'm just kidding. The cool thing about that Moto America Aprilia thing is I actually went back. See, Ed, unlike
you... Did you write that post, by the way?
Which
Michael?
Post?
The one we're talking about on roadracingworld.com.
No, it's a press release.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
It's a press release. Those just fall... they're like manna from heaven for a publisher, right? There's
and then you just
stuff.
Put up the ones that are decent.
We used to have a saying back in the daily journalism days. News is what comes in an envelope. Art is what comes in the big envelopes. Because they would mail us the photos.
Right.
Okay. So, no. Cool thing about it. Unlike many people... I actually do some research. I read rule books because I have no life whatsoever. And the cool thing
Could
about...
Could you get tech inspectors to start doing that, please?
You know, that's a lot of work.
If you're
going to
be a tech
them, right?
inspector, I think you should know the rules of your club.
One of the greatest
that you're working for.
Cowboy?
I'm just saying.
Cowboy Stamp, when I was at CVMA, he asked me once, he was a...
Does he have a horse?
No.
Just a hat.
Just the coolest
and that,
hat.
That's
though.
All it takes.
You know what, for him, that's okay. all that cowboy needs. But he actually asked me for a copy of the rule book once, and I said, what rule are you looking for? Maybe I can help you find it. He's like, nah, dude. I just want to roll it up and carry it around my back pocket. When I see people breaking the rules, I'm going to hit them over the head with it. That
go.
Guy.
That's
is,
a reason for a big rule
that
book.
That guy
that's
is my freaking hero, okay? Now, Richard, Cowboy's way cool, dude. Anyway, why am I talking about this? Right. I read the Moto America rule book on super stock racing. You know what? You're going to call me crazy. You're going to call me mad.
You're mad.
That class is going to have incredibly cool bikes. Some of those bikes are going to be cooler than the stuff you see on the superbike grid. Because the rule book says, if it comes stock, you get to use it. That inertial control that the Yamaha and the Ducati now have, that's all legal. Aprilia's...
Well, it's kind of crazy to have a rule that says you can't use something that comes stock...
On the bike,
On
right?
bikes, right? I mean,
that's...
as much as I would prefer to race with anti-lock brake, without anti-lock brakes, because I want to use skills for that...
It still takes skill.
Okay, but I mean, if it's cheap enough that you can go down to your dealership mm-hmm. and buy it, right? What does the car world do? Do they allow anti-lock brakes? I mean, I'm sure that in spec classes they do, but Formula Car Racing doesn't use it, right? They do have traction control.
What they did was they got away with electronically managed traction control, okay? Now what you have are computerized differentials, and you have 80 buttons on the steering wheel. So under certain conditions, you go into turn four.
So the new way to control stuff is to say, sorry, only four buttons maximum.
Right?
To have a simple rule.
Yeah,
this is a great example of this is an issue that clubs are going to have to work with. The technology keeps moving forward, and you keep trying to find a way to balance stuff, and that's why it's a never-ending battle. It's a moving target.
I think the clubs and the super stock class have got this knocked. If it comes stock, you get to use it.
That's all you can do, right?
Yeah, right? It's just when you get up to the Superbike and the MotoGP level where things get really complex and really kind of silly when you start banning technology that, is a $300 extra on your street.
It's kind of like the really cool idea of having like a $1,000 class. Right? Everybody gets the idea of that.
Right.
But, right? Oh, well, I got that bike for $50. Well, you got it for $50 because your fucking friend gave it to you.
Exactly.
It's a $10,000 bike. And so everybody loves the idea of it, but there's no way to actually make it work in the real world.
It's like, everybody.
So, back to our original point was.
We had a point?
Well, kind of, sort of. If we inadvertently say something as derogatory about a racer, as in skill level and things like that, we actually don't mean it. Now, we might specifically say, what's the name of that new British kid that just jumped up to MotoGP?
Oh, no, he's Australian. Jack Miller.
Jack Miller.
Jack Miller.
Jack Miller, in our opinion, is presently acting like a little punk and needs to grow up.
He is definitely.
But he's fucking fast.
He's relatively quick. We'll see.
Relatively quick compared to...
To me, he's a genius. But, what's his name? Mike Webb actually said... the race director at MotoGP said, it's one thing to be able to ride a 60 horsepower. Oh, nice, Ed. It's one thing to be able to ride a 60 horsepower machine rapidly.
Yes.
It's another thing to ride a 260 horsepower machine rapidly,
Actually, the thing I love about the Jack Miller story right now, in the last race of the year, right? The guy, Marquez's brother.
How the Honda guys couldn't wait to help Alex Marquez to the front.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
There were more people helping the nice guy.
That was hysterical.
Then there were people helping the dude who was giving the guy a wet willy on the podium.
Right.
Dude, I'm here to tell you, anybody ever gives me a wet willy on a podium, I am not going to just smile and look at the camera like
Marquez. Are you
going to say
something negative on him, about him on this podcast and mean it?
If he sticks his wet finger in my ear, he's going down. Absolutely. If he's listening, tell him to come out to the next We're a Race and we'll have it out.
That race was hysterical. Efraim Vasquez sat up and waved him by.
We've talked about this before, right? It's not just about your skills and your team and all. It's a whole host of other things. So over there on the counter, and we're not eating this at the moment because we need to talk, is a collection. What did you say that I can't remember the name
Hickory
of the
Farms.
Hickory Farms. Every year, I receive a Hickory Farms gift basket from the Mystery School, Rich Oliver. Why? Because Lindemann Engineering sponsors the Mystery School. Why? Well, because Lindemann Engineering was sponsoring Rich Oliver when Rich was racing, and so when Rich started the school, Jim continued that sponsorship of the school. And then when I bought Lindemann Engineering, I thought, man, this is a great deal. I'm going to continue this. And Rich sends some kind of thank you, a card and a little gift at the end of every year. Why do I mention this? Because we talked about and we got a lot of feedback on the sponsorship show.
Yeah, right.
Right? And this is an example. This is what people don't do, the simple thing. They're all over you at the beginning of the year, gimme, 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 gimme.
Right,
and then you don't hear anything again till the next season, gimme, 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 gimme.
Right.
If you just do a few simple things, a few race reports, a few mentions on your website, a thank you card, it puts you head and shoulders above all the other losers.
Anybody else who wants to send us some Hickory Farm stuff, I just went and sampled it. That stuff's not bad.
Just go to the Lindemann Engineering website, le-suspension.com.
Right.
Click on the contact page. The shipping address is there.
There you go.
Send it on your way. We accept gifts. We accept bribes.
Oh, yeah.
We accept under-the-table contributions.
Absolutely.
We accept ideas for the story.
Yeah, well,
it's all good.
I suppose.
So far we have.
I'm much happier with... Are we going to mention that human organ trafficking thing?
No.
Okay,
no,
never
not,
mind.
Not that one.
You
know, a good friend of mine, an ex-girlfriend once, asked me... I don't smoke.
Right.
She said to me, if... cigarette company, I forget which one she named, mm-hmm. offered you a whole bunch of money to sponsor your racing, would you take it? And of course, being a non-smoker, she expected me to say, no, of course not. Cigarette smoking is bad, yada, yada, yada. I don't want to support that. And you know what my answer was?
What?
Hell yeah.
Why?
I want to race.
Oh, you're insane.
I am.
I couldn't have pulled the trigger.
Do you
on
remember
that.
My story about Kevin Schwantz and Willow Springs? Tapping me on the head so I could go faster.
Wasn't it in one of our podcasts?
It was in our podcast about getting out of racing.
I don't remember that.
It's got
that.
Nothing to do with cigarettes. So my friend James Liquar, who used to race AMA Pro, he was a Pro Thunder champion.
Right.
One year, I forget the year. He became a crew chief like myself. He was working on...
Liquor is awesome. Look, somebody should send him a Hickory Farms basket.
There you go. He was working on Chris Orwich's team. With me, taking care of Roberto Pietre.
Okay.
And so he now is my website guy.
Right.
And he does an awesome job. Mm-hmm. Desmo Studios.
Okay.
If you can't find it on your own, you can go to the bottom of any of my pages and click on his little link that's there. So he heard the Kevin Schwantz story.
Okay.
And he sent us an awesome story with permission. I love the post. When Kevin showed up in the paddock with Yosh, I asked my friend who was on the crew what it was like to work with him. Who? The friend says. Schwantz, I said. That's not Kevin Schwantz. That's Calvin Schwantz. Kevin Schwantz is a world champion who doesn't hang out with us. Calvin Schwantz is that guy who helps us set up the easy ups and tries to pick up the counter girl at the Bratwurst stand. Is that a freaking awesome story or what? It's exactly what we were talking about.
So I have a
thank you, James Liquar.
Yeah, thanks, James.
Desmo Studios, website extraordinaire.
So, would you accept sponsorship from a crack dealer?
Listen, if you're dumb enough to smoke crack, it's just faster than fucking cigarettes or whatever else you're doing.
At this point, what we should do is drop the mic and walk off the stage. That was beautiful, dude.
Eddie Lawson drove for a Formula car team,
right?
That was financed by drug guys.
Which guys?
I don't remember. There's a name of the he only drove for one Formula car team. Go find
no,
it.
No, no, a cart. He drove
cart. Yeah,
drove
those guys. And when the team finally fell apart, his story is that all these people came up to him and goes, yeah, we thought you knew. He claims he never knew from the beginning. Dude, I've seen plenty of teams where you're like, really, dude? You actually have money
granted.
On your own?
Okay.
Legitimate, real money?
I
Come
get
on.
That. I
okay.
get that part. It's a question of whether... Look,
you want to know my concern about the crack dealer-supported team
okay,
that
see,
I would ride for?
Here's the question.
Who's the crew chief they hired?
Right.
Because if it's
problem.
The guy who's doing the crack, he's probably not good enough.
Really skinny dude who hasn't slept for a while. That could be a problem.
Where's
right?
my crew chief, man?
Exactly.
He's over there shaking over in the corner. He'll be back in a minute.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, he just redid your brakes.
Right? Exactly. Not interested in that.
Do we actually have a point to this show? Is there one?
No, this is a house cleaning show. Just about stories. By the way,
this is only episode 11. How much house cleaning?
While I was waiting for you to get here.
You know, we didn't say that at the beginning.
We didn't say what?
It's episode 11.
You're right, it is
it
episode
is,
11.
Right.
Number 11.
Yeah, number 11.
While Michael rode his motorcycle out here. He's like a real motorcyclist. And while I was waiting, Wernher von Braun called. I had to take a message. He said that...
What did Wernher have to say?
He said that, yes, the Saturn V rocket that he built, designed...
Right.
...is the most powerful rocket known to man.
Right.
But even that won't be enough, unfortunately, to help make you fast.
Are you talking about me?
You.
Okay, I'm going to have to take that crack sponsorship. I might not be fast, but I'll think I'm fast.
Bill,
and you know what? That's all that matters.
Bill Wickersham taught me that. I believe that is the number one smack talk of all time, right? Even a Saturn V rocket can't make you fast.
How do you perceive reality? It's all just a matter of chemical impulses that take place inside your skull, right?
You know, in the MSF curriculum...
If you think you're fast, you actually
are
fast.
In the MSF curriculum, they ask... What is impairment?
Right.
Right. Because obviously we want to discourage people from riding their motorcycles when they're drunk, right?
Right.
And so impairment is a chemical imbalance, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, food does that.
Yeah.
Right? And actually, I use that to lead into, hey, did you forget to eat breakfast and lunch today? Maybe you should eat before you get on your bike to ride home.
Right?
I know I'm like that. I'm at the racetrack. I'm all busy. I forget to eat. I don't remember till I start to get dizzy and shaky. And I'm like, oh, shit, I need a Pepsi.
Right.
Get a quick sugar thing.
Especially on the Saturdays at Willow, I had a routine for food and a routine for energy drinks. Not too many, not too few, just enough before we start the solo race.
When we Team Hawaii was doing the Weary Endurance racing regular,
right,
the 24 hours, we would have two teams. And so
day and night crew, basically?
No, two teams.
Oh, okay.
Team Hawaii and Team Hawaii 2, T-O-O.
Oh, dear God.
5-0, Team Hawaii 50, and 5-0-2. For Team Hawaii too. So we had enough resources that we brought along a mom, a cook.
Wow.
Morgan. Morgan. What's Morgan's last name? I forget. She was MSF chief instructor.
Cool.
And so we'd have a couple motorhomes, and Morgan would be taking care of everybody, and she would pay attention to when who ate and whatever. Obviously, you can't eat always at your normal times.
Right.
Right. But she would pay attention, make sure everybody eat. And one of her tricks, she was really smart. She would bring a cup of Gatorade or whatever the drink was, and a sandwich, no plate. And so both hands are full. And she noticed, right? Because what she noticed is what we would do is we would set the food down and keep working.
To what you're doing.
And right? And so then she fills both hands. They have to at least take one bite and one gulp before, right? She's a genius.
You know what she's saying?
That's a true thing. It's a thing to pay attention to when you're riding.
She wasn't out on the track.
Exactly. I remember one of the Bostroms talking about bringing a what's the word for a person who takes care of your diet?
Nutritionist.
The guy was working with him, so he came to a race with him.
Right.
And during the race weekend, it turned out that Ben or Eric. Eric, I forget which one, was eating like significantly less calories than he would normally. He's so busy, right?
Right.
And when the guy noticed that, and then they changed that, it made a huge difference, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're less tired, you got more energy.
Yeah.
So yeah, very important thing.
My shtick was always Cliff Bars at the track, and whenever I thought about eating, I would eat. I just didn't worry about, you know, how much calories I was having or anything. It wasn't like I'm eating only macrobiotic shadows, you know, or anything like that. But it's just a matter of making sure you had enough energy, because even if you don't think you're burning energy,
you're burning energy. Yeah, you're doing
a lot of it, you know?
It was easier at the AMA level because we had... Generally, you had two practices on Friday, and then you had practice and qualifying on Saturday, then you had warm-up and race on Sunday.
With times that were set for
always
everything.
At the same time, right? So you could have, but when you go club racing and you got, you know, there's six practice rotations and you don't know how long each is going to be, and there might be a red flag, and you're constantly paying attention to the calls you can't really hear, and then you signed up for 3, 4, 6 races.
Right.
Dude, all of a sudden you're like, at the end of the day, you got one more race and you're like twitching and shaking. Like, you know, what happened? Oh, I didn't eat.
Like the crack dealer or the crack crew chief.
You know, you can order up your own oxygen bottle and a little mask from Ian. I did that one time. I was at the track. This is in Hawaii. I ran the club, and we had our own ambulance truck. We had all the equipment.
Right.
Right? Or it just wasn't in an actual ambulance.
Okay.
And I forgot to eat, and I got all dizzy, and I mentioned it to my friend who was the EMT paramedic, and he goes, "You haven't had any lunch, have you?" I go, "No." He goes, "Here." He gave me orange juice and a couple hits of oxygen. I went out and won the next race.
Oh, dear.
That's awesome.
God. No. This is not medically approved. Do not get to the point where you
need
oxygen.
You know, if you go to the Suzuka 8-hour,
okay,
you are not allowed to use an IV.
Not anymore. They used to.
Yeah, they took that away.
Yeah,
it used to be.
Yeah. They used to be. Those guys used to race with a port.
They have the. Yeah, exactly. That isn't risky because it's a plastic thing.
Yeah,
and it's not
going
to hurt you. But it's just the idea of it, and it makes sense. A lot of people that came there for the race didn't live in that humid, hot environment.
Right.
It's very humid and hot at Suzuki in the summertime, and so that puts you at a disadvantage. But I also understand the full-on. Listen, if you're riding to the level where you need intravenous help,
you
probably need to take a notch back a little bit.
Exactly.
Because if you're that fucked up and then you crash and get hurt, you're already used up some of your magic hour.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, They used to have a rule. It was only two riders for 8 hours.
Yeah, it was, and there was a, you could have a third rider who was the backup. Somebody reserve. Had to get hurt before right. he could get to do it.
But
and now, you had to wear a different color armband,
right.
fast rider, slow rider. I have the fast rider armband.
Oh, dear God.
Hey, two-minute board.
Two-minute board. Oh, yeah. Who sent us in
who
that?
Who sent us that?
Complaining about the what was it, the two-minute warning? Okay, we're not
going to... It was the guy who races the minis.
Oh, right.
Pags.
Oh, okay.
Tony Pags.
Okay.
He goes, two-minute... what did he say? Two-minute warning. Really?
Yeah, right.
Couldn't it be a two-minute board? Which makes a lot more sense.
Some sort of football.
So you had a two-minute warning question.
There's an endurance bike sitting in Ed's shop over here. And,
a Moto ST.
Moto ST.
Was that SV1000 from Team Hammer.
Was it a race winner?
They had three of the bikes. So did this particular bike win one of the races?
Who knows,
I don't know.
It's a full-on race bike. Anyway... Yes. I always loved the style of the chopped front fender that you see.
You called it a bobbed fender.
Bobbed fender that you see on the Suzuka 8-hour bikes. Why do you do that?
To get the wheel in and out faster. So there are a couple of functions going on. You got to put the bike on a stand and you're going to lift the wheel up.
Correct.
The shortest amount of distance you can move the wheel up is the less amount of work.
Okay.
So if you lift the front of the bike only an inch above the ground,
right,
and you try to pull the wheel out, the fender's in the way.
Right.
So you have to cut the fender.
Okay.
So if you don't cut the fender, so you use your normal pin stand that you use at a track day that goes in the steering stem and lifts your wheel 4 inches off the ground, right? And then you let the wheel come down and then come forward. And it works just fine. But it's just a teeny tiny bit faster if the wheel only has to come forward. The calipers are not being removed from the fork legs.
Right.
And they can turn in and out because the fender is plastic and it flexes. So when I pull the wheel forward, the calipers can move in this one direction out.
Got it.
As the wheel goes by up, right?
Okay.
If I pull the wheel down and then forward, I've got the calipers moving around, flopping around more.
Who knew?
So this way I can have the beveled part of the pads on only the front edge, and you only bevel the front pads a little bit.
Right. You kind of need that
the
stuff.
Rear pads, you can bevel the hell out of them so it goes faster. But the big thing is the time it takes to get the thing on the stand.
Really?
The less distance you're lifting it, the more solid, stable it'll be, and the shorter it has to go, the faster and easier it is.
All I know is that it looks bitching.
It looks bitching, and check out those big round ball things sticking down in the bottom.
Those are for the stand.
So the stand goes on fast, and so it can still rotate. So that the calipers can come in and out.
Absolutely.
The show is deep thinking.
Wait a minute. I'm Michael Gugis.
Yes, and I'm Ed Sorbo. Aloha.